Good afternoon and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. My guest this week, speaking to us by phone in his office, is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Burton. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon to you, and thanks so much for agreeing to change your schedule. We were unaware that Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes was getting married as early as he was, and we certainly wish he and his new bride well. They're on their honeymoon right now, so thanks for agreeing to take his spot on the schedule this week.
Good afternoon, and it's not a problem, and I wish Chris well.
If you've got a question for Mayor Barton during our next half an hour, please feel free to give us a call at 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. And we have had a few questions that have come in from listeners from our last program, so we'll get right to those. One of them says there are an increasing number of blighted and abandoned or bank foreclosed homes that make the city look blighted. What can the city do to ensure lawns are mowed to create curb appeal for those homes so they can be resold and that the blighted homes might be torn down?
Oh, absolutely. And I guess I disagree. There's not an increasing number. There's a decreasing number. Those numbers have steadily decreased, you know, as the economy's turned around. But we've been very aggressive in the last 3 years at tackling blight. And the city itself has taken down over a dozen homes on our own. And then we've had probably twice that many taken down on the private dollar. And I really felt like when we started taking down those structures, the people, property owners themselves, would start to respond. They would realize that we're serious. And so we would leverage what we're spending. And that's exactly what's happened. So we've had a lot of structures come down. We do still have more in the works. Just approved a list this morning that includes four properties here in Crawfordsville that will be demolished in the coming month or so, but certainly there's a legal process that we have to follow there, and you know, you can't just come in and just because it looks abandoned, it's still owned by someone, it's still someone's property, and it still has value. So we have to go through that legal process, go through those steps, and then we proceed to clean those up. As far as the mowing, we have a very clear and concise city ordinance on that, and we follow that as well as the state law. And our city crews are out right now mowing some of those properties that the homeowners or the property owners haven't kept up themselves. So, again, it's a little bit of a timely process because you can't really start the process until the grass reaches a certain point. And then there's so many days that you have to give them and so many proper notices. So, as everyone knows from their own experience, the grass is growing very rapidly right now. So we follow that procedure. And in the spring, you always have this kind of rush where it gets started and we have to get proper notice and it looks kind of bad for, you know, a couple weeks. They're mowing those now. And once we've served notice once, we can just keep going back and mowing. So it won't get that far ahead of us, you know, now that we're past the initial process in the spring.
Let me add in my own follow-up, which is I know there are state funds available to help to remediate blighted properties. Is that something you're trying to avail yourself of?
We've looked at that, and we're still looking at that process. There, like anything, a program like that, there are a lot of restrictions, and there's quite a bit involved. So we've not really used any of that money ourselves, and we've not really pursued that. We've explored it. We're kind of interested. But the restrictions there are much tighter than they would have you believe.
What are some of those? Why are you hesitant?
Well, I think it primarily has to do with how you get control of the property and what you're going to do with the property afterwards. And while that sounds simple on the surface, you know, there is a due process, and it does take quite a while to move through. And so, you know, we've been pretty comfortable with what we're doing. And like I say, we really feel like we've leveraged what we've done here because the private side has responded. Those who are familiar with our community will look at areas that like Chestnut in Washington was really bad a few years ago. That's been cleaned up, was immediately purchased by private. We recovered our money. It's developed now. Wabash and Oak was done entirely on private money. So we think we're coming out ahead doing that. But I'm not saying we won't go after some of those funds. We might. But to date, that just really hasn't appealed. You know, if you go through all those steps, you sometimes end up with more in legal fees than what you could have just done and on your own and been done with it.
Another question that comes in from a listener says, the sidewalk along Turtle Park by Dairylicious is difficult and dangerous to traverse. What steps should a citizen take to appeal for a sidewalk to be repaired?
Absolutely. They should, if there's a concern with a particular sidewalk, feel free to call my office and let us know, and we will address that through our code enforcement side with our inspectors. They'll go out and take a look at it and speak with the property owner. We do have a challenging situation in this community in that many years ago, the city council passed an ordinance that said basically sidewalks are the responsibility of the property owner, not the city. So here we sit decades later, and I think now we're starting to really have to come to terms with that decision that was made back then. Some property owners keep their sidewalks up very well, and others just simply do not. And whether it's that they choose not to or they don't have the financial means, I mean, it probably runs the gamut. But so we have several areas in the city that the sidewalks are in pretty bad shape. And, you know, so you're left with the choice of going out and enforcing that ordinance, and maybe sometimes, you know, maybe an elderly person without, you know, with a limited income, without the ability to come in and put a new sidewalk in. So there's some tough decisions to be made there, and sidewalks are one of the challenges that we have left hanging out there that I intend to tackle in a second term. And really, my thought right now is that we should probably start in the core of the city and experiment with the city taking some more responsibility for the sidewalks and then work our way out from there.
So the last question we got in advance of the show today, and by the way, if you're listening to this program now and you have a question for Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton, feel free to send us an email at ask@wbaa.org, tweet it at WBAA News on Twitter, or call us at 496-1999. This question kind of gets at an area I'd like to spend a fair amount of time on today's show, and it says, what is your vision for revitalizing the city's sense of community to create an eclectic and unique selection of restaurants, breweries, shops, and services in the downtown area?
Well, I think that question drives right at the heart of our vision that we're creating through the Stellar Communities program. And really what we said in our Stellar proposal was that we have a great community. We have all these strengths. We just need to pull it all together. And we need to appeal to all different age groups, all different ethnic groups to want to live in our community. And I'm not sure that we've done that very well in the past. So we go after the quality of life that I think this person's probably referring to there in our Stellar proposal. But, you know, to me, it has to start in the downtown and work its way out. We have to build that sense of place, that sense of community, offer those kinds of unique dining and shopping experiences that people want. And I think our Stellar proposal starts to do that. You really need some good key anchors in the downtown to get that going. And above all else, you need foot traffic. You need people in the downtown. So anything we can do to increase the activity in the downtown will help fuel this. And for example, our proposal with the Ben-Hur building and the old hospital now is under construction. We know that will put people in the downtown. And so, you know, once we have people there, we think businesses will respond in kind, and we'll see more of these unique opportunities come up. But even beyond that, in our Stellar proposal, we talk about building that sense of community through volunteerism. And we know we have many groups and individuals in this community who want to help and do good things, but it's very disorganized. And so we're trying to find a way to create, if you will, a volunteer center type of approach that allows them to engage and really match up the resources that are out there with the need that might be out there as well.
So you mentioned the Stellar Cities application, Stellar Communities application, and your city council recently voted unanimously, I should add, to receive a $10,000 grant from the state to complete that application and get yourself in order to be viewed by the site selection committee coming up later this summer. And I was interested about a comment that I saw that a city councilor had made, and they asked, will the state sort of look at this to see how we vote on this? The implication being that if there's not unanimity here, if the city doesn't appear to all be on the same page, it might be a mark against the city in the state's eyes when they're considering your application. Do you view it that way at all?
Well, I don't think, I responded that night saying, you know, I don't really know whether they're going to look at the vote tally or anything one way or the other. That's probably not a question that I could answer. We're not always real clear what they're evaluating and what they're not evaluating. But, you know, I personally don't think that if one person, one city council member, you know, voted no and you had six voting yes, that would probably raise too many red flags. Certainly if it was contentious and it appeared that it was pretty close and, you know, mayor broke a tie or something like that, that might send a little bit different message. But the reality is that our community is, we're all kind of on the same page, and we all want to move forward and we want to do things. And in this particular case, I think his comment was driven by his own personal political ideology that, you know, just he has a problem taking money from the state or from the federal government. Everything should be done at the very local level.
It's going to be hard to fund road construction that way, but I digress.
It is.
Is there an argument to be made that there should be disagreement because, you know, reasonable people can see different sides of things, especially where economic matters are concerned?
Well, I think you can make that case, and I think you will see that as we move through the public input portion, you know, creating a vision with Stellar or any other, you know, comprehensive type plan is not just about the vision of the mayor or the city council or, you know, whatever. It's about the vision of the community. And as you start to engage the community and collect that vision, you will see some very different viewpoints. And that's okay. We need that. We need to have those differing viewpoints, and we need to really find that common ground and decide where we really want to go. So I don't think that's particularly problematic. I think it's probably healthy.
You told the council that you think your application is somewhat unique, at least in part because it does take care to try to cater to students and young professionals. It seems to me that we've been talking about this idea of brain drain for years now, at least since Mitch Daniels' first term as governor, if not before. I mean, I can't tell you how many press conferences I've gone to that have talked about this phenomenon and how we stem it in Indiana. So is it that the state has been slow to cater to this group of people, or individual cities haven't picked up on it, or the ideas we've tried in the last 10 plus years haven't worked? I mean, what of these things are you trying to overcome here?
I think it's fair to say that we've probably all failed to a certain degree, and I think we can say that just based on the numbers. You know, I mean, there are some communities that have done well, but for the most part, as a state and many of our local communities, we've struggled with this. And the numbers that are very driving for me, that are very telling, are looking at our own numbers in our community, that we lose 22 to 35 year olds. They're not here. You know, they go off to college, they don't come back, or they go elsewhere to seek opportunity, and that really cripples our community. So that's a lot of my stellar argument, that we have to find a way to stem that, and we're working on those things right now, and you know, we have some help from Lilly and Wabash College, and so we already have some initiatives underway. But it's about creating opportunity, but it's also about creating a community in which people want to live. They have to have the things here that appeal to them. So we talk about quality of life, but I know I've said this before, that's a very dynamic definition. And what's quality of life to one generation might look entirely different to another. So we have to find those areas that we can overlap and really build a community that appeals to a broad group of people. If we only appeal to one generation, we're probably going to be in trouble.
So how are you involving 22 to 35-year-olds in your crafting of your Stellar application? What sorts of input are you getting from them? Because it would seem like those are the people who could most clearly tell you this is what we want.
Right. Well, we're trying everything possible, to be honest, and we've already had some public input sessions, and we're getting ready to have some more. I have, you know, obviously young people on staff here, interns for the summer and everything, and I try to get as much information out of them as I can. But it's not easy. It's not easy to get their engagement and to get their input. You know, Wabash went through a process of trying to define, you know, what represents quality of life and quality of community, you know, and all those kinds of things, and did a great job. The only thing troubling when you look at the results and you look at the data, it was not the 22 to 35 year olds participating, you know. So even they struggled to kind of get buy-in and input from the younger groups. So we certainly do reach out as much as we can. It's hard to get their input when they're not here. I think that's the first thing you take away. But certainly we use social media. We try everything possible to try to reach that group.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We're chatting today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton, and we'd love you to be a part of the show. Give us a call. 496-1999 is the telephone number. You can also send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Do you think you should expand your focus where age is concerned? After all, you've got, for instance, you mentioned Wabash, you've got a bunch of young men, 18 to 22 years old, who come to Wabash for school, many from mostly other Midwestern communities that are similar in a lot of ways to Crawfordsville, who I imagine you'd like to stay in the community. So do you think catering specifically to those few hundred graduates every year might actually be one of the best potentials you have for return on investment here?
Well, I don't think, I don't know. I probably take exception to catering to that age group. I don't think that's what we're trying to do. I think what we're saying is we're holding our own in the other age groups, but we have to continue to stay on our toes there to make sure we do that. Kind of an untold story in our community is that we've been very successful at attracting retired people into our community. We have some very good attributes and quality of life that appeal to them. And so they choose to come here and live, and that is wonderful. I mean, that is great. We have to make sure we don't falter there at all, and we keep that going. You're just trying to find the areas that it looks like you're slipping, and we seem to be slipping in that younger group. So it's not just about them. It's about all these age groups, but we specifically know we're slipping in that one area. And, you know, when we look at the Wabash students, I mean, it's unrealistic to think that even most of them are going to stay in our community. We know that's not the case, but we know even our local residents who go to school there often move on and go elsewhere when they're done. We look at the success stories of students from Wabash who go on to do all these amazing things and start these businesses. If we just kept a few of those in our community, we would be well served. So we're trying to take cast a broad net out there and really capture as much as we can and appeal to a broad group.
Well, my thought is you've got essentially a captive audience for 4 years of people who might not have known much about the city if they're not from West Central Indiana, who come to college there and who leave with a pretty good college degree. And these are people who would be able to, as you say, go out and do interesting things. So the more you can keep them local, it seems like, you know, I don't think catering is a bad word in this case. I think it is. I think there's a sensible economic argument to be made that these are the people you should cater to.
And I think we're doing a much better job of that. And that's largely thanks to, you know, to Wabash and President Hess being on board and the things that are happening. But, you know, all of these students now are so much more engaged in the community than they have ever been. It is dramatically different in the last few years. And really what's happened is, first of all, we have all these internships where we take students and place them in the real setting, in the real world, and they start applying what they're doing, you know, in the classroom and solving problems and doing research and working through things. That's very powerful. And then, you know, if you have students before who were, let's say, getting financial aid and they have a campus job, you know, and that's all changed and evolved. So they're not getting aid to go sit and fold towels, you know, in the locker room anymore. They're engaged in the community. They work in the nonprofits. They work in the, you know, local government. They work in those areas. And it's just natural that once they get outside the campus, you know, they discover the community. They discover that the people in the community are real people. There are real things going on here. There's much more buy-in and much more involvement. And, you know, we're only a year or two into that right now. Give that some time, and that's really going to start to pay dividends. But I have students working in my office, you know, almost every day, and it's amazing at first. You know, they might have been here for 2 or 3 years, and they've never been any further east than maybe the president's house. Yeah, they don't get off campus. So as we send them out in the community to do things, they discover there's some interesting things here. You know, so we think we're on the right track there.
Do you in turn need to change the mindset of some of the young professionals? I think about the classic big city lure of people leaving college and wanting to go somewhere large and interesting with lots to do. you are not going to be Chicago or Indianapolis. You have talked a lot about focusing on quality of life. So how do you convince people that their quality of life can be better in a Crawfordsville than it can be in Indy or Chicago, both of which are also fairly near?
You know, everyone has a different taste and they're looking for something different. But we know a lot of people prefer a smaller community, especially when they start thinking of having families and raising children. But they don't want it so small that they don't have adequate shopping and dining. And I think that's kind of the path that we were on. So we're trying to change that and say, you know, you can be here in a small community and walk down the sidewalk and know the people you meet and go downtown to the little stores or whatever, but also still have adequate shopping and dining. And you are close to some larger communities in which you have even more opportunities. So we just have to find a way to carve our niche out there. And I think there are plenty of people wanting this type of experience out there that we will be fine.
Is there an amenity that you think your city does not currently have that you'd like to see added to help attract some of these young people?
Oh, I get no shortage of suggestions. You know, I mean, you hear about the gathering places, the focal points, you know, and you'll hear things thrown around, you know, that's the Starbucks and the Targets and those kinds of things. And, you know, certainly we're going to do everything we can to try to attract those kinds of opportunities to our community. But it's really a matter of numbers and shifting the demographics. If you bring in the population and you have the disposable income, you have people working with disposable income, those kinds of things will follow. And that's where we're just shifting the numbers. It's a little bit of the chicken and the egg game, but we think we're headed in the right direction. And Stellar goes at some of the key things that they talk about that maybe the city can influence, you know, such as trails, neighborhood parks, you know, pocket parks in the downtown, those kinds of things. Those are things we can directly go at, and those are the things we're identifying in our Stellar. And even if we're not designated Stellar, we will still work at making those a reality.
Some of the other communities in central Indiana, and I think of Westfield right now. I a couple of years ago, when Grand Park was still being built, I took a tour of it with the mayor, and he said to me, Westfield is positioning itself as the place to go for youth sports. In other words, they'd picked one thing, and they said, we're going to try to be the best doggone city at youth sports that there is out there. Do you have a unifying characteristic like that in Crawfordsville, or are you just going toward general improvement through Stellar and through the Regional Cities Grant and things like that?
I don't think we have one overarching thing, and I'm not sure we want to go that route because, you know, if you look at the history of our community, diversity has long been our strength. And when I say diversity, I mean diversity of our economic base. You know, we're not tied to one industry. You know, if the automotive industry goes down, it has an effect, but it doesn't cripple us, you know, and so we have this very diverse base there. I think it spills over into what we're looking to do here. And not really tie ourselves to one thing. And I think we have a good mix of industrial. We have tourism. We have a tourism industry that's emerging and becoming stronger and stronger with some of the events like the Pro Motocross and the Aquatic Center and the college and all of our museums and all of those things. So I think we want a healthy mix here. That's what I hear from everybody. We don't want to get tied to one thing. We've looked at the amateur sports thing. We think we probably are positioned to capture a little bit of that, but it seems pretty risky to put all your eggs in one basket and really pursue that because, you know, and having had children, you know, in that realm and doing the amateur sports thing, those teams are not going to go to the same place week in and week out. They want to move. They want to travel. They want to go to different communities, and that market is still good, but I think it's probably a little softer than it was.
Is there any sort of a danger if you appeal to this 22 to 35-year-old demographic that you're trying to build that you might actually turn off longtime or older residents of the community who feel they're not being addressed as directly as they might like?
That is certainly a concern and a risk, and I think we try to be very careful to think about that. I think probably the most challenging part is convincing the older groups that these other things are important. So there are times that I talk about things we're trying to do with quality of life, and I can see the blank look on their face that those things aren't important to me. I don't care about those things. But I try to get them to understand that it's key to keep the young people in our community, and I think it starts to register. But we constantly have to be thinking about the other age groups as well. I mean, we can't turn a blind eye to that. Like I said, we've been very successful at attracting retirees into our community. And surprisingly, we have a fair amount of retirees from the East Coast that come here because they're on a fixed income, and that fixed income goes much further in a community like ours than it would, you know, back home on the East Coast. So we have to stay broad. We have to continue to appeal to all groups. But when you look at things like trails and pocket parks, I spend time on our trail, and the diversity of the age group and the people you see out there is pretty interesting.
I've spoken with economic development folks a little bit in the last couple of months about the regional cities plan that the governor has put together, and I know that people from Crawfordsville and Lafayette and other places are working together on a plan for this region of the state. I wonder, do you think there's a worry about double dipping? Because if you guys wind up the recipient of a Stellar grant, I could see where someone would say, hey, why should they also get regional cities money when they've already gotten this other big influx? Is that a concern at all?
I'm sure that's a concern to the state. I'm sure that's something they have to evaluate, you know, and look at the big picture and say, okay, we're doing different things in different areas of the state. I guess from my perspective, I'm just in a situation that I can't sit idly by and hope that surrounding counties are going to do the right thing to you know, make us successful with regional cities or something like that. I have to continue full steam ahead to try to move this community forward. So I'm not convinced that I'm seeing the activity that needs to occur to move our region forward. I think we have a ton of potential, and we have a ton of leadership out there. But when you try to pull, you know, multiple counties together, multiple cities together to try to do things, that's not easy. That's not easy at all. And I know our community has been a little behind, I felt like, so we're trying to shore things up and move forward here. But I'm sure the state's going to look at the big picture. I have no doubt that they will do that.
In our last minute or so, let's say best case scenario, you get money from both sources. Would you target the regional cities money differently than the Stellar money so that you could say, look, we're not using it for the same thing. We're trying to do even more.
Yeah. I think clearly they both have a different purpose, even though they sound similar. Stellar money is very tied down, very dedicated to certain things. And I think regional cities kind of goes the same route. So they would complement one another, but I think they would be entirely different animals.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, again, thanks for switching up your schedule. We've run out of time, but we look forward to doing it again next month.
Very good. Thank you. Have a nice day.
Same to you. And be sure to join us in 2 weeks for our conversation with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. There will be no Ask the Mayor at this time next week. So get your questions in now for West Lafayette's mayor, or indeed for any of our mayors for our next set of programs. You can email those questions to ask@wbaa.org. You can also tweet your questions @WBAA News on Twitter. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Have a good rest of your day.